Welcome back to Building an European Cultural Backbone Conference. The next presentation is done by Ben Poor and Christoph from the European Broadcasting Union. They will talk about a tool set for transcription and translation called Eurovox. Okay.
Thank you very much for the introduction. And apologies for not giving Christoph his surname. He was a late entrant. So Christoph is a colleague of mine working on this project. And when I say colleague, I mean, I'm the product owner, so I do literally nothing. And Christoph is the actual coder, so he does all the work. But I have the pleasure of giving presentations and showing people the fantastic work that him and Loris in the team do. So without further ado, let me launch myself. So Eurovox is from the European Broadcasting Union. It's our transcription and translation toolbox. My aim is to tell you a bit of what it is, why we made it, and what we think we can do with it, and why we think it's useful. Doubtless you saw my colleague Sebastian Noir yesterday give a presentation on our recommendation system, Peach. This is another of what we call a building block. So these are services that are meant to do something that we can't necessarily find commercially on the market, but which allow us to build quite innovative and public service media-oriented products. So I'll talk a little bit about the building blocks and then talk a bit about the products that we can build on top of it. So if I can learn how to do my slides, I'm actually looking at the wrong window. So a bit about the EU. Doubtless you will have heard this yesterday and you will hear this again tomorrow from my colleague Nicola. The EBU is the world's leading alliance of public service media. That means many stations in Germany that you're familiar with, Bayerischer Rundfunk, all the other ARD stations, but the BBC, France Television, broadcasters from Iceland to Armenia, from Norway to Portugal. We're all part of the same association. 112 member organizations, 56 countries, with a potential audience of over a billion people. But more importantly for this discussion, providing content in 153 languages. And that's a heck of a lot of number of languages. That's way beyond the EU's official list of languages, which I think is something like 25 or 28, and includes some big languages like English, German, French. It includes some smaller languages like Sami up in the north, Romance, which is one of the official languages of Switzerland, but also a number of dialects. And also not to forget as well that an awful lot of content is produced in languages to reach, should we say, minorities or immigrant populations in countries, because public service media is indispensable for everyone, not just the native speakers in that country. But of course, how do you make that happen? I mean, there was a good example shown from those who know the book Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was made into a wonderful TV series in the early 1980s. I will forget the film that came afterwards. But the concept here is that you would stick a fish in your ear, an evolved fish, and the fish would feed off your brain waves and would essentially do a live translation of whatever you were listening to, directly injecting that into your brain. Now, I would say we haven't reached that level of technology yet, although Google would have you believe that you could stick some headphones in your ear and have a simultaneous speech-to-speech translation. I first talked about this some years ago, and apparently it turned out afterwards the first demonstration in 2017 was mostly, should we say, was exaggerated somewhat in its capabilities. But I think certainly this sort of capabilities is not too far away. But what do we talk about now? If we go back to the GAFAM, so the big Googles, Apples, Facebooks of the world, they invest hugely in AI technology, which includes things like speech to text or automatic speech recognition, translation technologies, speech synthesis, because it allows them to reach new markets, to reach new audiences, to do things like smart speakers and responsive interfaces and automatic translation of the content. Most importantly for public service media, excuse me, these large platforms are also moving into the content production world. I mean, obviously Netflix invests billions. Amazon has quite a successful set of productions and channels. And one could imagine that the others could do that if they wanted to. Certainly Apple has the money to do that. So they're really becoming competition to maybe what public service media has traditionally been about. So the question that I always pose is, should public service media be comfortable using services primarily from the content platforms like this that are actually going to be our competitors in the future? So going back to public service broadcasters, they have increasing demand on resources. So there's an increasing amount of EU legislation that talks about accessibility, making sure that subtitles and captions are on all content, or making sure that there's things like signing, or making sure that we can reach non-native speakers. And this is coming more and more into legislation. And it's also true to say that public service broadcasters are having to do more with less. Their budgets are not necessarily increasing. They may even be decreasing in some cases, but they're being asked to do more. And traditional translation, transcription is an expensive thing to do. You need people to do that. And those people can only do a certain amount of content. So how to make more use of AI technologies to do this? How can we more easily allow non-native speakers access to public service content? How can we do it quicker? How can we do translation and more content quicker? Because of course, public service media is competing against other platforms, especially for things like news, but they still have obligations for quality and trust. Public service media is amongst the highest trusted sources of news content in Europe and probably beyond. So that is something that is highly important for public service media. So how can we use AI intelligently to allow us to make more of the resources that we have, but also maintaining that quality and trust? Also as well is how can we do that in a more transparent and competitive way? So again, using these commercial AI tools is great, but is that transparent enough? Are there problems of competitiveness? And also, how do we develop our own capabilities and expertise rather than having to rely on others? So that's where really Eurox came in. Excuse me. We noted that many of our members were using these services. They were using services from Amazon or Google or Microsoft to do things like transcription for various purposes, for taking content and making transcriptions of audio and video content, for then translating that, even for doing live captioning, which is what some members are doing. So rather than, should we say, inviting them into the arms of one of these commercial platforms as an exclusive arrangement, we thought it would be great if we could provide a service to allow them more transparent and equal access to these vendors. So we created the Eurovox platform. It is meant to be an open platform that provides a single interface to multiple vendors, enabling easy integration and portability. So I read you a bit the mission statement, but what does that actually mean in practice? I'll tell you a bit about that. But who is it for? When we talk about broadcasters, who do we mean? We mean not just broadcasting content, but also their journalists, also the citizens that consume the content. So for journalists, one of the things they have to do is to collate content from across the world, create news sources. That's not always in their own native language. So having a system that can collate and translate sources is vital. Again, doing that quickly means that news can be produced quickly, more accurately, making sure they can hone in on the right segment of the content, give them what they want, but also translating their own content into multiple languages. Again, making sure that what they produce has more reach. For broadcasters, again, having their own produced content in additional languages is fantastic. It means that you can increase reach for your own citizens. It also means potentially you can translate your own produced content and sell that in external markets. So producing drama series is quite expensive. Producing documentaries is very expensive. How can that be funded from international markets, from sales to international markets? Of course, that happens right now, but it's quite a manual process, quite a time-consuming process. How can these tools allow it to happen more quickly? And also, for instance, improving content metadata. So having a transcription, having a translation feeds directly into recommendation engines. And that's what my colleague Sebastian talked about yesterday, that actually the more information you have on content, what's happening inside makes the recommendations more accurate, more relevant. And finally, as well, the citizens, probably the most important part of the chain. How can they access news, culture, and entertainment regardless of what their accessibility or language requirements are? So the Eurovox project is actually three products currently in active development. And again, Christoph is one of the developers. Rather uninspiring names, but I'll tell you what they are. The first one is the Core API, and that is essentially a single API or platform for language tools that is integrated into a range of different vendors. It's a bit like a telephone exchange. So if I want to, for instance, access tools from Google, I can do it through the Core API. If I then tomorrow I want to do that to Amazon or someone like Azure, I can do that just as easily without having to change the way I talk to the API. So it removes some of the complexity, some of the specificities of individual platforms. Again, I'll talk to you about that in more detail in a minute. The tool is something that uses the Core API. It's a web-based application for users to easily transcribe and translate audio and video content. So it's squarely aimed at content producers for users wanting to take their own content and translate it, or wanting to take in content from somewhere else and translate it into a language that they speak. But we're adding a whole lot of new stuff to that as well. And it could be a really useful AI assistive platform for allowing users to investigate content, navigate content, produce subtitles, segment content, export any number of things. And I'll give a demonstration of that as well. The third thing, which is why I've invited my colleague Christoph, is in real-time captioning. So a lot of these language tools can be applied to file-based content, so stuff you've already produced. They can also be applied to streams or live content. So we can take the broadcast streams of something, transcribe it live, and do a translation of it live. And that's quite useful for things like real-time captioning, which again is something that's really useful for many broadcasters. But it can equally usefully be used for things like real-time recommendations or real-time whatever. So there's a whole host of different use cases that are linked to this. So let's go through those three in a bit more detail. The core API, it's a single API for unified access to many different language tool vendors. What does that mean? Integrate once to any vendor. That's kind of the special sauce. You integrate into the Eurovox API, and I'll show you a bit about what we mean by that in a minute. You can then access any other vendor transparently without having to worry about its complexities. And that means things like are listed on the right-hand side here. Language codes, and this is quite prosaic, but not every vendor uses the same language code standards for representing languages. Storage requirements, for instance, Amazon, when you're transcribing content, they'd like you to upload that content into their own storage system, S3. Microsoft does the same. Some other vendors just want you to stream that to them directly. Again, we remove that complexity, so you don't need to know about that. Obviously, the vendor API, that changes between vendors, configuration, logging, and analytics. So the whole thing about Eurovox is you don't need to know how to access the vendor. You just need to know how to access the Eurovox API. And you can change the vendor that you use dynamically. Say I want to use Amazon for my archive transcriptions. I want to use Google for my news content. I want to use Speechmatics for published news content on websites or social media. I can do as part of the same workflow, and I can choose and change that whenever I want to. For those of you who love Swagger and who love APIs, here's a shot of some of that. We have an API mainly across three different intents. So transcribe, translate, and voicing. Transcribe is taking audio video content and coming up with a transcription. Surprise, surprise. Translate is to translate text in blocks or in sentences, you can choose. And voicing is to generate synthetic speakers. And as an example of that being called for a simple translation request, again, the same API, the same format for request for response you get for each and every single vendor. And we've kind of created a normalized set of formats across all the vendors so that everything you can do with one vendor, you can do ideally if they support it with another vendor by using the same sorts of requests. So again, the benefit, what is the benefit? You can integrate once with API. You access the superset of functionality across all implemented language tool vendors. Most of the big vendors, they largely have the same functionality, but sometimes not. Sometimes one vendor may have some special functionality that they offer, and then the other vendors catch up with that. So the benefits of having something like Eurovox is we're able to support that special piece of functionality, and also equally well, when the vendors catch up, we're able to add that to the new vendors that will then support it. You can access more languages than with a single vendor. Most vendors have their own set, some less languages than the others. I think there's a statistic on the next one which gives the amount of languages, but we allow access to all the different languages across all the different vendors. So not just the big platforms like, again, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, but for instance, we are quite interested in integrating with the smaller specialists. So for instance, if there's an Icelandic language specialist or something that specializes in Romance language, we can integrate them. They then have as equal prominence as the big platforms do, but obviously they specialize in a specific language. So it gives people who integrate in Eurovox the ability to use the big and small vendors, research institutes, commercial platforms, also their own technologies as well. If they want to integrate their own language models in, they can do. It has a quite an easy to use modular architecture to allow new vendors to be adapted quite quickly. And Christoph, I think, will confirm because he added a new vendor last week in a matter of days. It's also got a very flexible deployment. This can be deployed in the cloud, on-premise, on my laptop, on a supercluster. Doesn't really matter. It can be fully elastic and scalable. So I'll adapt to any infrastructure that you wish to. current status, it's currently used in production internally in EBU. We host our own version. We offer that to our own members. We use that internally for a number of large projects. One of those is the European Perspective, which I think you'll be hearing about tomorrow. We support this list of vendors. I won't go into it too much, but the idea is that we can keep on adding more and more vendors as we discover them. And again, we support file-based and real-time content processing. So here's the statistic I was looking for. Currently, we support 135 different languages and dialects for transcription, and over 120 supported languages for translation, which if you pair up the languages, because obviously you're going from one language to another, that makes around 20,000 different combinations of languages for translation. What's next? A couple of things on the roadmap. On-premise, a lot of what we use currently is cloud-based services by vendors, although we do have a few that we run, that we can run on-premise. That's important because a number of broadcasters have quite strong requirements to run anything like this on-premise for security reasons. They don't want content that hasn't been broadcast, that's in the production process, to go outside of their domain. So having that being fully on-premise is quite important. Again, additional vendors, benchmarking data is important because we want to be able to automatically propose the best vendor for the best task based on what is required. Could be quality, could be cost, could be speed. Things like speaker identification, that's really useful. Handling of mixed language content is always a challenge. A lot of content actually has mixed language, and being able to transparently switch between them automatically is also quite a challenge as well. And obviously, working in the broadcast domain, we go sometimes beyond just simple stereo audio setups, multi-channel, multi-microphone, multi-speaker. How can we better handle that? So moving on, this is the next thing, which is the tool. And essentially, this is the user-facing tool that sits on top of the API. And I really want to get quickly onto some demos as well, or it's just me talking. So the whole point of this is rapid transcription and translation. Again, this uses everything through the Eurovox API. We don't use anything else beyond the Eurovox API. It's meant to be essentially a front end onto that. But it allows the user to quickly and easily navigate, translate, and transcribe audio and video content. We arrange the transcriptions into sentences. We allow translations from those sentences. You can export that. You can make corrections to that. You can do subtitling from that. And I'll just show you a few screens with some functionality. I'm not going to say everything because I want to show you how this works. One of the important things to note is that this is an assistive tool. So we use AI as, should we say, the first step. It gets you 95% of the way there. Transcriptions, translations using AI are never perfect. They can be very good. They can almost be almost perfect, but they're never absolutely perfect. So this is a tool designed to use AI, propose this to a real human, and then get them to make the final corrections and the final adjustments before they can then publish that somewhere else. Translation, I'm going to show you this. I'm not going to go into this too much, but it also allows me as a user, for instance, to take a piece of content in a language I don't understand, like German or Chinese, translate that into a language I do understand, like English, and then work out where in the content is the bit that I'm interested in. And you can then cut that out, maybe send that to a professional revoicing vendor. That saves me having to dig through an hour's worth of content by using that company, which is expensive, and I can just send off that maybe 20-second segment to be professionally produced. A lot quicker, a lot cheaper, a lot easier. And we can do things like subtitling and voiceovers using AI voice synthesis. And again, I'll show you a bit of that as well. So we get to the demo bit. That was rather a rapid run through. But if I just try and switch over to my other window, I can actually hopefully show you this live. I'm hoping the demo effect won't strike, but I want to show you a few little steps of how I, as a user, could use the Eurovox tool. So you can see here I've done some things previously, so that's why there's a lot of things in my list. As a user, what would I do? I have a video file, I have an audio file. What I do is I create a new job. I can then drag and drop or pick that file from my file system or even ingest it from a URL. I then pick the language of that file. So here you can see all the different languages that we support. Now, a number of these are, should we say, dialects. We have a lot of Englishes here, but it's all the supported languages across all the different vendors. And we can get quite specific, Scottish Gaelic, or for instance, Vietnamese, Thai, lots of different languages we support. Now, let me just pick English. And again, I'll show you how I, as a user, would use it. So I pick English, and then I pick one of the vendors that I wish to transcribe it with. I could pick Speechmatics, for instance. So I'll simulate that. Now, I pre-produced something because something of, should we say, a clip of 2 or 3 minutes long will maybe take a minute and a half to transcribe using most of these vendors. There are some new vendors that do it absurdly quick, but I haven't got this loaded up in this environment. So I'll show you something that I previously ingested. It's a report from the BBC on what was then the new Mexican president. I always like using this clip. And I'll show you what the tool looks like, and I'll play you with this content. So I haven't made any corrections. This is all the default transcription. Now you can see here, it's arranged what is being said in this video into sentences. That's how we operate in the tool. And I can skip between the sentences, but let me just play you a bit of this just to convince you. Hopefully you can hear this.
Mexico's new president is Andrés Manuel López Obrador, known simply as AMLO. He inherits a country with extreme levels of violent crime. The murder rate has more than tripled since 2006.
So hopefully you can see that it's highlighting the sentence currently being spoken. And I, for instance, can skip forward and I can go to this part and I can play it from the part.
This policy of targeting drug bosses proved effective in Colombia with the capture of the notorious drug lord Pablo Escobar, whose cartel had its most powerful...
Or I can skip around the waveform if I want to. Now, this is obviously the basic transcription, but what if there's something wrong? So this looks a bit weird here, so let me see what's wrong with this sentence.
Possibly. Over the past decade, a string of the leading drug lords in Mexico have been either killed or put in jail. This policy of targeting...
That's interesting, it's actually picked up the background. But what I could do, here is I detected a full stop here. So I can say here there should be a full stop, and I can amend that. And I can also say...
Possibly. Over the past decade...
Actually, that's two separate sentences. So if I put my marker here, I can split. And that makes two separate sentences. I can preview the second one.
Over the past decade...
The timing isn't quite right, so let me just shift this.
Over the past decade... Okay. The leading...
That looks better. So let me apply that. And what that will do is that'll then have the new structure of transcriptions here. So hopefully you can see a very small example. But I can go through, I can see what's being proposed, and I can make quick adjustments on the text, the sentence structure, and the timing. Now, of course, this is just the English transcription. I understand English quite well. So let me actually do something useful and translate it. I'm going to translate it into German. I'm going to use DeepL. Now, this is fairly quick, but it does take a couple of seconds. So let me just wait here for it to finish. A couple of seconds, literally just a couple of seconds. So that's now translated each sentence into German. And for instance, if I'm a German speaker, I can say, oh, this is quite interesting. Let me skip here.
Over the past decade, a string of the leading drug lords in Mexico have been either killed or put in jail.
And I can, for instance, add a number of different languages. So Arabic, quite useful. We have a number of Arabic-speaking members in the EBU. And I can go on adding more and more languages if I want to. I believe also that such languages such as, I think, Klingon is supported. I don't know, in two different sets. But you can see here a whole number languages that are supported. So we can take an English piece of content and translate that into a wide range of different languages. And again, I'll show you why that might be useful. I've taken something that was originally produced in Polish. I don't speak Polish, but what I've done is I've translated that into English. And this is a report on a DB broadcasting in Poland. I'll just play a little bit of that.
Szybko rośnie też liczba cyfrowych stacji w Wielkiej Brytanii, Niemczech, w Czechach czy w Belgii.
And see, now I can get a sense of what this is talking about. If I really want to, I can do something like, for instance, do this. Hopefully this will work. I can burn the subtitles in.
W Europie rośnie liczba stacji radiowych, które nadają w systemie DAB+. Według raportu niemieckiej organizacji Digital Deutschland, cyfrowo nadają stacje z 30 krajów na kontynencie. Norwegia w ogóle.
Or finally, what I can do is, for instance, do the revoicing. If I just skip forward.
Has been surpassed. Oh. Penetration.
That was an English segment.
Not only more opportunities, but also, according to the German Institute, can be even cheaper than broadcasting science is the digital leader in Poland.
Jest polskie radio, którego wszystkie 9 programów jest już na plus.
And this is not the end. We haven't said the last word yet, because we still have plans to launch another antenna.
Kolejną antenę.
So the voiceover isn't perfect, but it's a good first draft, and there are more improvements we can make here. So let me just stop sharing that, and I'll get on my presentation and hopefully lead you very rapidly towards Christoph. Let me just try and switch back to my slides. There we go. Fantastic. Good. So moving on. And I won't go into great detail, otherwise I'll end up speaking for the entire 45 minutes. The whole thing about this tool is it's not just a separate tool that someone can use. They take their content from one system, put it into this system, then put it back. It's designed to be integrated. So it can be part of an existing workflow, a transparent part of an existing workflow. And that's currently how it's being used as part of our European Perspective project in the EBU, as well as elsewhere. A couple of things that we want to add, but I'm really going to clip over this very quickly. We want to use this as quite a good tool for adding regions to longer form content. Now, why is that useful? It allows us to chapter content, allows us to segment content. It allows us to mark music and speech. It allows us to mark out topics. It allows to add metadata to those sections, which is quite useful when you come to then having the metadata useful further down the line. If I have a podcast that's split up into segments and I know what they're talking about, I know who's talking, I can pull up pictures of them, I can have links to further information, I can add a lot of rich metadata into that piece of content that can then be visible on an OTT player or a connected device or a connected car or a television or something like that. It can be used to make a much more interesting user experience for consuming that content. And here's a few little screenshots of how that might be done. Again, the first steps of this really are manual editing of regions. But again, what you can add on to that is also AI assistive regioning. So if I can apply an AI tool to automatically tell me which bits of the music, which bits of the speech, or do topic extraction on that, I can start adding quite a rich tool set with an editor interface to allow me to correct where the AI isn't quite right. Again, there's a whole other things we have on our roadmap. Speaker identification is fairly key, as well as handling of mixed language content. So how can we intelligently allow AI and assistive methods to say, well, this bit's in English, this bit's in German, here he's switching into Polish. So, and then move on to the third and final part of the Eurovox project, which is real-time captioning. This is something we started quite late in the day because we knew this would be useful, but we wanted to concentrate on the file-based bits first. This is all about really having the ability to do captioning, not just in the original language, but translated as well. Imagine, if you would, being able to view a TV broadcast and being able to switch transparently into the subtitles of your choice, and that choice is only limited by the amount of translation technologies that are backing that up. So it's not human-based, it's done on AI. It allows you to translate that into any number of different languages, something that isn't possible right now. And that's the tool set we're building. Really what we want to do is to add onto the tool I just showed you the ability to have a live mode. So for instance, it allows users to real-time caption content, clip that out into the file-based workflow and then work on that on the side. But I think there's a huge number of interesting things we can do beyond the file and live mode as well. And this is something that we prototyped before. We actually applied this on our own meetings. So we did some webinars and meetings using first cut of the system. And we were able to caption what was being said in English, but then translate that into 9 other different languages, including Welsh, and Arabic and Turkish and Spanish and German. And that was quite successful, quite popular. We were really pleased to make that work. So now we come to the demo. This is where I switch over to my colleague Christoph to give you a moment of light relief. He's going to show you a quick demonstration of the real-time captioning and translation. Christoph, over to you.
Okay, thank you. Let me just prepare and share the screen. And you should see it now. And on the right of the screen, you can see it's the stream from Deutsche Welle Television. It's in English. On the top left, there it's a transcription which is done real time on every new content that's been transcribed. It appears here at the bottom, and on the lower on the left bottom screen, you can see the translation of the transcription. So let me now set the volume up for some time so that you can see the results. Just hold on a second. And
profiting. Public authorities and companies are scrambling to safeguard their networks from would-be hackers and increased cyber attacks. Manufacturers of fertilizers are also earning more. Russia is one of the world's leading producers of fertilizer. but international sanctions are expected to reduce Russian exports significantly. Meanwhile, renewables are more in demand than ever as countries rush to wean themselves off Russian energy. But in the longer term, it's the arms industry.
So just a quick demo, as you could see, we get the results on every 10 seconds. We also split post-process it to split it into a limited amount of characters so that they may be presented in a more human friendly way. But yeah, what you can see here is SSE endpoint, which just is listening to the incoming results, and yeah, that's all real time, as you can see. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thanks. So always good to see something working, at least not having the demo effect on that one. As Christoph mentioned, this is done in real time. Obviously, there's a delay on the subtitles. It tends to be it can be as little as you want it, but we tend to find kind of 5 to 10 seconds is a useful middle ground for getting quality and not too much delay as well. And obviously with the translations, it's important to, even though you can get the transcription live, each word individually, you have to offer a complete sentence when doing translation. Otherwise, the translation just doesn't have enough context. It doesn't have enough data to do a proper translation. So that's why it's a slightly different user experience when you're doing translations than it is transcriptions. Okay, Christoph, you wouldn't mind muting your mic? I think we might be getting some feedback. I just want to do a few final slides and then I'll finish. I really want to go over to questions. One of the other things we're doing is we want to do things in a very open way and transparent way. And one of the goals of the project is to be open source. I'll tell you a bit about that in a minute. But we're also being more transparent in the way that we do our own models. So rather than just using external vendors, we're also doing training of our own translation models. We're using models that are being produced as part of, for instance, European projects like Horizon 2020. And we're super interested in integrating with other people who've made their own models. The benefits there, of course, is that we can offer something that is maybe specific to the news domain or some other domain that could make better quality. It also means that we can start creating our own technologies, start adding our own capabilities in making these models, because public service media has a huge amount of content. And in theory, you can do an awful lot of good training using this content, and that's something that we're quite interested to do. Early steps, we created some open models in a couple of languages that we hope to use in the near future. So what is the future? For us, future steps, I always like to hear from others doing similar work. There are other projects that seek to do similar things. That's great, a bit of competition and inspiration is a great thing to make things move forward. So if you're doing something similar, I'd love to talk to you. We always like to talk to smaller vendors with new technologies. If you're a specialist in a particular language, that's fantastic. Collaborations are always useful. I think my colleague Sebastian said this yesterday. Obviously, this is being funded by the EBU membership. So we're not able to open source this just yet. That is the goal, to open source the API layer. But if there is a specific collaboration that someone wishes to do, we're always open to that. One of the things, again, the unstated goal for this project, and one of the reasons that we wanted to open source the API layer, is because we're looking to see what we can do for standardization of language service APIs. So rather than having a slightly different API for different vendors, can we all coalesce and agree on a standardized way of doing things? Some of that already exists. It could just be a case of putting that together. So I think that's me. If you have any questions, I'd love to take them now, or there's my email address.
Hey, you said you were planning to open source the API. Are you also planning to open source a tool?
There is no plan to. No, there's no current plan to. I think the API is more obviously something that we would wish to open source. The tool is probably, I think we'd have to make the case for that internally. So there's no current plan to do that.
So the API layer that is potentially being open sourced would entail the connectors to the various services and the server part that would accept the REST API that you've shown earlier, the Swagger docs that you've been showing for the different endpoints, and it would translate these into the individual backend requests to this, to the various third-party services that you support. Is that correct?
Yeah. Exactly. So there are a couple of components. One of those is the central core server. And then, as you say, there's the individual plugins that adapt whatever you would be calling to individual vendors. So we have one for Amazon, Google, Speechmatics, DeepL. I would love to open source all of those as well. That depends on the legal status of how that API is being called. So if we're able to release that open source, the individual adapters, we will do. If we can't, then we can't. But it depends, again, on what protection there is around the APIs of those vendors.
And would that part also include, I guess there's something like a job queue or so running that would report on the status, because some of them can be quite long running, I guess, or because that's something where also there's lots of different ways to do this and to develop tooling that can integrate with various providers. Having this part of a job queue and a status report on the individual jobs and maybe a notification when your request has finished processing, that could also be something that would be nice to kind of have a common abstraction for. Would that be included in that part, or is that a different layer?
That's a good question. So we currently have elements of that. I think Christoph will put his hand up if I'm wrong with any of this, by the way. Internally in the core API, we have the ability to plug in a queue. So we've been using different queuing systems. Again, a lot of this we like to have in a pluggable and modular way. So if you have your own preferred queuing system, you can plug that in if you want to. Also the ability just to do basically thread-based queuing, so no queuing at all, effectively. Things like rate limiting particular vendors, that's something we need to develop. That's on the roadmap. Reporting is always important. That's on the roadmap as well. So I'm hoping we can concentrate more on some of that more admin related functions in the future. But for the time being, we just have the ability to queue up jobs into the core API and then dole that out to the individual vendors without necessarily looking at their limitations.
I would be interested if, when working with all these different providers and also maybe I didn't get if there was also if you also employed some open source engines in there with models. I would be interested if you have some results on the comparison between these services, because I would guess that's something that this tool set would enable, that otherwise is quite a lot of work to have comparisons between the different providers and what works well and what doesn't work as well, and maybe even for the combination between transcription and translation. Is there any insights that you can share that you gained from working with these different providers?
So benchmarking is an important topic. There are colleagues of mine that put far more effort than I do into doing benchmarking technologies. There's a project called the EBU STT benchmarking. That's a collaboration on how to create benchmarking tools. Worth a look if you're into that kind of thing. We use the Marion open source engine for building our translation models. Again, we work with the University of Pisa to do that. My colleague there, he has done a great amount of benchmarking work just to measure the quality of the models. They compare quite well based on the data that we're currently building. We don't necessarily do our own benchmarking outside of that. The difficulty with benchmarking is to have enough data to do an effective benchmarking. And that's, we don't currently have the resource to pull together that amount of data to do that benchmarking on. Anecdotally, I have my own opinions on which vendors are better than others. And certainly the EBU membership, when they use these services, they also have their own opinion. So if I were to recommend a vendor for transcription, I might say you could use someone like Speechmatics. But again, that's based on my own personal experience. And I note now that there are quite a number of competitive transcription providers that are as good, cheaper, and a lot quicker than Speechmatics are right now. So I think the whole thing here is that the vendor's capabilities and competition changes every 3 to 6 months. So we need the ability to switch between them dynamically without being locked into one, because they would just change the capabilities over a very short space of time.
More questions in the room? Okay, so thanks, Christoph and Ben, for presentation and demo. Very interesting, thanks a lot. Yeah, we have a short break and be back at 2 p.m. with another talk. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.